Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by The Media Is You. That's right, you can get a specific day-long intensive training on how to be the best media outlet for your business. This is designed specifically for small and independent business owners, and it takes place this Wednesday, January 12th, 2010. Hope to see you there. You can register today at themediaisyou.com. Well, here we are at the start of another new year. How exciting is that? And last week, as you probably recall, we had a fantastic show with the author of a book called The Habit Factor. And he talked with us about the importance of developing good habits and how what really sets us apart from other people where our businesses are concerned are the habits that we develop to support our specific business goals. And to help us along the way in that regard today, we have another fantastic author. Her name is Christine Louise Holbaum, and she is a public relations professional, freelance writer, and the author of Sham, I Am, and Diary of a Mother. She lives near Munich, Germany, with her husband and two children. You can visit her website at diaryofamother.com and follow her on Twitter at Power of Slow. Her new book is called The Power of Slow, 101 Ways to Save Time in Our 24/7 World. Welcome to Indie, Christine. Welcome to Indie, Christine.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, you know, here's the thing I really want to share with everyone, because last week's show was so fantastic on the power of habits, and your book has one chapter specifically on that, but there are several themes in this book that I think are really important for us to embrace, and one of the things you share at the very beginning is slow does not mean stop. It means being mindful. Tell us what you mean by that, Christine.
Absolutely. The power of slow means mindful living. That means that you look at what it is that you do and how you spend your time, and that helps you assess if you're really living your ultimate purpose or not, if the things that you're doing are informing your ultimate purpose or not. So, for example, if you want to take habits as an example, it's a perfect way to look at how you're spending your time. What kind of habits do you have? How do you start your morning? How do you spend your day? When do you go to bed? How much television do you consume? So the power of slow is really about thinking about the way in which you spend your time and the way you spend your life, basically. It doesn't mean to stop, because obviously when we do things slowly, we're doing them mindfully, we're thinking about the things that we're doing, and we're doing them on purpose. That ends up making us faster than if we actually try to go fast. So I outlined 10 principles. I don't know if you want me to go through those very quickly.
I do, but you know, first I want our listeners to know how fantastic you are. You're not just writing about this because you read about it elsewhere or because you've done a bunch of research and put it in your book, which you actually have, but you actually live this. You're a wife and a mother and a businesswoman, a PR professional and an author. So you
Yep.
must put these things to work in your own life. I think that's really important. Tell us how, I mean, is this how you essentially do it? You incorporate the things in this book. So you've achieved so much, 3 or 4 books, 2 kids.
Yes, and all of this from Munich, Germany, which I think comes from technology. I would like to say at the outset that I'm not a technophobe. I absolutely love technology. I think that they're very useful. I'm actually considering getting an iPhone. But these things can also really waste our time if we don't use them mindfully. So if we're just kind of cruising on the internet, that can suck our time so much. So it's really about setting boundaries for yourself and knowing what's too much and what isn't. You know, what serves you best. So I also do acting. I don't know if you know that, but I also act on German television, and that's a really great way to balance all the other things that I do because I work from home. Small business owner, it's good to get out and see other people and to interact in a different way. And so I have a casting agency, and occasionally I'll play these little roles, and it just kind of gets me out. Helps me see other people. And a lot of times people will say, gosh, look at your bio, look at all the things that you do. How can it be that you live the power of slow? I mean, you sound like you're just way too busy. I do these things mindfully and in a way in which works for me. So I talk about slow, that might be somebody else's fast. And it might be, you know, somebody else's fast might be somebody else's slow. So it's really about looking at the pace of life and the way in which you live and seeing what works for you best.
I love that, you know, and I often like to say that we should be a slave. We should make technology our slave, not the other way around. And that,
yes,
that can happen if, as you say, we're not mindful. We are going to go through one section of your book in particular, which deals with habits. But first, Christine, we have a caller from Georgia. Her name is Ricky. And Ricky has a question for you. Hi, Ricky. Welcome to Indy.
Hi. Thank you. Well, I was born in Germany, so I'm
excellent,
glad.
Ricky. Small world.
Yeah, really. What did you? At what point did you start looking at your pace in a mindful way? Was it quite some time ago? And how did you start incorporating that?
That's a great question, Ricky. If you read, I think it's the epilogue of my book, I talk about how the power of slow actually got born. And I would be very dishonest if I said this is something that was a quick turnaround thing that all of a sudden I was able to slow down my life. I'm a recovering speedaholic, meaning I'm somebody who always thought that going fast was a good idea. But I saw at one point, after working in corporate America for a couple of years, that pace of life wasn't sustainable, especially when I had two children. So I was at the ice cream parlor one day, actually, with my three-year-old, and this is where it was like an epiphanic moment where I said, oh, my gosh, you know, my daughter was looking at all the flavors of ice cream, and she didn't know which one to decide to have, and I said, oh, come on, come on, come on. I started to rush her through this process, and I thought to myself, I'm denying my child one of the most delightful experiences of being a kid, of just standing and being in childlike wonder of all these different flavors. And I literally, for the first time, was mindful about how fast I was trying to go. And I stopped. You know, we decided on the flavor, and then she ate the ice cream. It was all very slow at a childlike pace, a three-year-old, you know, kind of pace. And it really taught me that, in that moment, that you can still be an effective human being and go at a different pace than the one in which I was trying to go at. So it really started, I would say, about 8 years ago, where I had that first moment. And it was through my writing and through my living in a different country, because we moved to Germany shortly thereafter, that I came to realize that there are many different ways in which people live and many different definitions of productivity. And I had grown up in an environment that was, you know, active equals productivity. And that's actually not true. You can be very, very active and be extremely exhausted, but you can also slip down and really focus on the things that you need to get done that are your priorities that make you productive and make you happy at the same time.
Does that
Excellent.
Help, Ricky?
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting. It sounds like, you know, paraphrasing what she just said, is it's a process. It's not something we can rush ourselves into, but moment by moment, right, Christine, you kind of look at your life, and this can be a continuous assessment that in small pieces improves the way we live and what we achieve over a period of time.
Absolutely. It really is a moment-by-moment thing. I mean, for example, if you're sick, you know, you're not going to go really, really fast, right? So your fast might be much slower than if you're in a very good state of mind and a very good physical condition. It also depends on your situation. It might make sense for you to go at a faster pace one day and then the next day. It's really looking at your priorities and deciding what's the most important thing that I need to get done today. That might, your pace of life might change depending on the cycle of the season. You know, if it's summertime and you're working in a beachside resort, well, your pace of life is going to change than if it's the wintertime and you're maybe, you know, selling candles or something. I mean, you know, so it really depends on your situation. And I think being mindful at any given moment is the key to the power of slow.
Thank you so much for that. And Ricky, thank you so much for joining, and thanks for your question. We're going to get right into the power of habit, which is a part of your book. Now, one of the things you share with us, Christine, in such eloquent and simple terms, is the power of cycles and rhythms in our lives, which lead to the habits that we develop. Tell us a little bit, by way of overview, what you mean by that.
Well, really, it's about how we spend our lives and what do we do every day. I mean, really, if we looked at how we get up in the morning, I don't think people really think much about it. They're so into, okay, I do this, I do that, I do that, I get a cup of coffee, I check my email before I have breakfast, I do this, I do that, I get into the car, I'm multitasking while I'm in the vehicle. You know, people aren't thinking about how they're actually living their lives. And if they were to take a moment to step back and look at that, they might actually assess that the things that they're doing are not ultimately contributing to what it is that's going to make them happy or that's going to make them feel more productive. So it really, our habits inform everything about us. And in addition to that, if we look at sort of the overview of what the power of slow is really trying to get you to do, if you look at your relationship with time itself, if you talk about time as if you don't have enough of it, guess what? You're right. Because it really is a state of mind. Our time perception is a state of mind. So what the power of slow is trying to get you to do is to establish a more positive relationship with time so that you have more of it. That means looking at how you habitually talk about time, whether you're working against the clock, if you're engaging in what I call clock combat, by trying to do many multiple things at one time. There are many different things in which we do that work against time that we may not even be aware of. So what I tell people to do is to really look at how they spend their morning, for example. How do you wake up? What's your habit? What do you habitually do? And if it's checking your email or if it's doing something that's, you know, where you're not fully awake, maybe it would be better to actually stop and take a deep breath and really go within and think about what it is that you want to do for that day before you get started. And it might just take 2 minutes, but those 2 minutes can change everything.
And Christine, you know, I love the idea of thinking about time the way you do. Sometimes I stop myself in the middle of the day, whatever I'm doing, and I ask myself this question: am I spending time right now or am I investing time? And if the answer is I'm investing, then I define what I'm investing it in. And if the answer is spending, I stop doing it and connect it to an investment and a specific outcome, and that helps me to make the most of my time.
See, I just love the way you think, Donna Maria. That's awesome.
Well,
I'm
going to
blog
book.
About that. Do
oh,
I have your permission?
But you know what? Let's give some people some specific things to do. And I love this about your book, The Power of Slow, because it's not just a bunch of theory, although there are a lot of statistics that are really insightful and help us really embrace why this is so important. But you have specific things for us to do. So let's focus in on what you call the top 10 principles where habits are concerned. And let's just run through those because we can all begin right now today incorporating some of these principles into our lives and change everything for 2011. So principle number one is the habit test. Take it away, Christine.
Right. So the first thing you want to do is really identify what it is that you want to accomplish. I mean, I'm a big list person, so I like to kind of take a look at what it is that I, what it is that I want to accomplish for the day. So it's really giving me a visual. One of the things that I do is, and this is slightly off of what the habit test is talking about, but it's really helpful. It's something I've just recently discovered. Because normally what happens in our day is we'll go down to our office and we'll just start getting on the computer and we'll get completely distracted. So one of the things that you want to do is really look at what is your priority. So taking, for example, these magnets, and putting all of the different projects that you have going on at one time that might feel like they're overriding or overlapping commitments, and put the name of the project on each one of them, and then stick them to the magnet, and then put them on a whiteboard that's a metal whiteboard, and then you have these priorities. And you, before you sit down at your desk, you take the project, whichever one's the most important, you put that at the top, and then you list them according to priority in sort of a physical, you know, sort of a vertical way, and then you sit down. And then you focus on that one thing, and once that's done, you get up, you move it off the board, or you move it off to the side, and then the next thing bumps up. So that helps you manage your energy and your time and also your habits because you start focusing in much better.
I love that. That's such an easy way to do it, too, And you don't even need a magnet. If all you have is a sticky note or a piece of tape, anyone can do this. There's no excuse for not identifying how we invest our time and what we're trying to achieve as a result of what we're doing. So your book talks about sort of going off on your own and participating in something that you call the habit test.
Yes. The habit test is really looking at recording what it is that you do in a typical day. It's like a time diary. And you sit down and you consider what it is that you do typically in the morning, in the afternoon, or in midday, in the afternoon, in the evening. And then taking one of those things and switching it around. So, for example, if you're like, oh, I always have two coffees in the morning, maybe try having one coffee and something else. Just kind of shake it up a little bit to see how you feel about it. If it's something that you feel like, well, you know what? This is something that I really want to do. Like, for example, I interviewed one guy who said for his mental health during the work time, like not when he's on vacation, but during his work time, like when he's not on vacation, he'll have a cup of coffee and he'll read his paper. And that for him was like a mental health check. That for him was like, that was the habit that was serving him well. So it's looking at your habits and saying what serves you well, what is neutral, like you'd live without, and you could kind of switch it up, because that also frees up energy when you change your habits a little bit. Or if it's something that's negative, then you want to actually replace it with something else. So, for example, if you drink too much coffee, you might want to replace one of those or two of those cups of coffee with some other beverage that is not caffeinated that's better for you.
This is so good. And, you know, just this first step has me thinking about what people always recommend when it comes to money. You can't change your habits when it comes to money unless you first know what your habits are. So I
yes.
love the idea of sitting down and not saying, oh, I'm going to change myself, because you can't do that until you know what you're doing, right?
Exactly. This is, again, a part of the mindfulness. It's about looking at how you spend your time. What are the things that you do? And habits are good. The habits are, and it's not something I want to place a judgment on, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Habits are things that give us structure, that have us feel like we're safe, and these are things that we can rely on. These are things that make us feel good. And the question is, are the things that you're doing truly making you feel good, or are they making you feel bad, but you're worried that if you let go of this habit, you might even feel worse? And that's
right.
the question that you have to ask yourself.
Right, and of course, Confucius said, and I'm paraphrasing, that we're all the same. It's our habits that set us apart. So that's
right.
such an eye-opening quote, and something really simple and easy to remember. So, Christine, principle number two is then assessing your life's purpose. How does this fit into, the habit test that you just described?
Well, again, when our habits are feeding our purpose, they're good habits. I mean, again, I'm putting a judgment on this, but if we want to make it good or bad, habits are really about framing your life and what it is that you're doing. And our life's purpose is, again, you're not going to know what that is unless you sit down and identify it. So once you've looked at your habits, the next step is to look at the overall picture. So the habits are the detail, and the overall picture is your life's purpose. And a lot of people will say, well, I don't have time to think about that. Well, if you're telling me that, then I ask you, most likely, the chances are, you're spending a lot of time distracting yourself from this question. So if you were to take a moment to step back and look at the big picture of your life and say, what is the ultimate purpose here? What is it that I'm trying to accomplish? It will actually change how you live your life, because you will suddenly, the activities that you are engaging in will align with that purpose automatically. So it's truly, this is a very, very important piece of the architecture of the power of slow by really determining what it is that you're up to. So, for example, my motto in life is changing the world through words. And words can be written, they can be spoken, they can be danced, they can be mimed, it could be in pictures. It's all kinds of ways in which I can communicate those messages. And so that's like my ultimate purpose. And
I love that. It's an important thing for us to do.
It truly is, and I think people are a little daunted by it, thinking, oh, my gosh, well, your purpose can change. I mean, my purpose wasn't always changing the world through words. It was dancing for a long time, and then it was acting, and it was doing these different things, and now I've found a way to blend all of those things into a new form. But the ultimate intention, I think, has stayed the same.
Yes, yes. The overall purpose doesn't change, but our lives change, and we change with them. It makes me think about what Napoleon Hill said. If you don't know what you want, you can't say you never had a chance to get it. So working with where you want to go is such an important part of this process. So principle number three is a replacement strategy. Tell us about that.
So Dr. Tina Tessina, I interviewed her for this piece, and she really gave me some great insights. It's about replacing the thing that you used to do. So smokers, for example, maybe will start chewing gum, or they'll do something else to fiddle with their hands. Maybe they'll play with rosary beads or something to replace that original habit. So instead of saying, I'm going to go cold turkey and I'm never going to do this thing again, you know, you move from maybe, let's use coffee as example again, maybe you move from coffee to green tea. You know, it still has caffeine in it, but it's a different, and it's better for you and that kind of thing. So you're trying to replace the thing that's not serving you with the thing that is serving you. And it's fairly comforting. So, for example, if you watch a lot of television, you could say to yourself, okay, instead of watching 5 hours of TV, I will only watch 2 hours of TV, but instead of, you know, after that, I get to check my email for an hour or something like that. So it's like replacing that need that we have and fulfilling it in a different way.
I love that. Such a, you know, something so basic. And once again, just challenging us, Christine, to focus on ourselves. And I think as small and independent business owners, Christine, oftentimes we are so focused on our customers. If we're moms, we are so focused on our children. We're so focused on, you know, making sure our business is profitable. Those things are so important. But if we don't focus on ourselves and put ourselves in a right position to accomplish those things, none of that really matters. And it has helped me to replace some things with other things so I can achieve, you know, more specifically into my life purpose. Your principle number four is identify your pain point. Okay.
Yes.
We all have a pain threshold. Tell us what you mean by this.
Well, there will be no change until you reach the pain point. The pain point is
like fatiguing that muscle, right?
Yes. Well, exactly. If you want to use the example of exercise, you've got to feel the burn before you're going to feel the improvement. You're going to see the improvement. I think it's the same thing with the pain point. You have to reach a certain point in your life where you're like, I can't take it anymore, and now I'm going to change. And now I'm going to make that shift. Now I'm going to transform this certain thing. I'll give you an example in my own life. I believe I even mentioned this here in the book. It took me years to really find the house that we really wanted to live in. And I had been suffering for so long in this small house that had very, very low ceilings, and I kept hitting my head on the ceilings, and I knew the moment that the kids got old enough that they started doing the same, that it was time to leave the house. So that was really my pain point, and I was like, I can't take it anymore. And I put in, like, three search terms, new house in the town where we're living, because I didn't want to take my kids out of the school system. And wouldn't you know, we ended up buying the house that was for sale that I found that day, which was only two streets away from where we lived.
Ooh.
And it was like the pain point is what we need. It's what I needed. I needed to hit my head that fifth time to say, now it's time to make the change.
Right. Sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Exactly.
Number five, Christine, is fighting feelings of overwhelm.
Yes. This is tangential to the concept of information overload. Let's just use that as an example, because I think most small business owners can really relate to this, especially around email, text messages, and the like. When we feel overwhelmed and we've got so much going on, it's really important to first identify the feeling and say, I'm feeling overwhelmed. That's when you push yourself away from the desk for a moment. You take a deep breath, maybe get a glass of water, walk around your desk a couple of times, and then sit back down, and then take it piece for piece. It's about really taking things in their bite-sized pieces that you can handle, because you know what? You can't chew, you can't put more in your mouth than you can actually handle, right? So think about it that way. Taking it in bite-sized chunks will help you with this feeling of overwhelm. But the first thing is to really identify it and to acknowledge the fact that you're feeling that way, because if you try to pretend like you've got it all together all the time, chances are you're going to explode at one point. So it's really about acknowledging those feelings.
Excellent tips, giving us permission to feel the overwhelm, but not an excuse to not push forward because of it. I love that. Number six, breaking the cycle through breath.
Yes. Dr. Adrienne Ahern is a peak performance psychologist that I interviewed for that piece, and she was really great. She said, you know, because when we start to get frenetic and overwhelmed, we start to go faster automatically. Our breath gets faster and it gets shallower. And at some point, we start breathing just under the collarbone instead of belly breathing. And she's a big, big proponent of belly breathing. And that's essentially just pretending your stomach is a balloon. And in that moment when you start to feel like you're going really, really fast, to slow down and expand your stomach like a balloon by taking a very deep breath and doing that about 3 times. And that will help you slow down because then you'll make better and more informed decisions because you've taken a moment to actually stop and think and breathe, literally breathe.
And then there's number 7, out of sight, out of mind.
Yes. Sometimes, you know, it's kind of like my kids, right? You know, they've got chocolate chip cookies downstairs. It's kind of unrealistic to expect that they're not going to eat them. So sometimes just removing the cookies from the kitchen and putting them somewhere else makes them forget about it altogether. So sometimes it's about really removing the things from your life that are overwhelming. Excuse me.
That's okay. And, you know, I understand you have a little bit of a cold, but here's what I'm thinking about as you're saying that is I'm looking across the room at my iPhone because it's across the room. It's not distracting me right now. And I love that idea. I haven't thought about it in the whole time we've been here, but if I had had it sitting right next to me, perhaps I would have gotten a push notification or some other thing and wouldn't have been able to, you know, continue to give my undivided attention here to you and my listeners. So that's really good. And principle number 8 kind of leads into that. You know, give yourself a break and make sure that you, you know, kind of take your vacation time and take a break to make sure that you, you know, actually alter your way of thinking to encourage more positive habits by sort of moving yourself out of that situation. And then principle number 9 in Christine's book is really all about creating the opening. When you follow, I think, these principles up to this point, what you're going to end up seeing is that you have created new opportunities for yourself. And I've been doing this in my own life recently. And, you know, if you really take the time to assess your habits, fit them into your life purpose, replace bad habits with better habits that help you achieve what you want to achieve, and moving through this breathing thing is such a big thing, giving yourself a break, that does open up new opportunities. And I love that because you can create your own doors for you to walk through. And, of course, once you do that, you feel so much better because you accomplish more. And then switching up, finally, principle number 10, it's really all about making sure that we don't get bored. We switch up our routine on purpose, not because something's up and, bam, we have to make changes, even when we don't want to. When we're mindful, we do it on purpose, and that helps us be more in control and feel more more empowered about our particular situations. So those are 10 principles from Christine's book. This is specifically chapter 3 that we've covered, but I really encourage you to check out The Power of Slow, 101 Ways to Save Time in Our 24/7 World by Christine Louise Holbaum. You can check her out on the web at powerofslow.wordpress.com at her blog. You can also follow her on Twitter at powerofslow. Fantastic. She offers lots of fantastic tips, and that's a really, of course, very exciting thing to follow people on Twitter for, things that can really, really help you. Coming up next week on Indie Business Podcast, I have Jim DeBetta. Jim is the author of The Business of Inventing, and he's going to join us to share tips on getting your invention into America's thriving marketplace. Now, we've all seen all these inventing shows and you know, reality shows on TV about people who have a great idea. They want to turn it into a business. But you know what? A great idea is pretty much worth nothing unless you really know what to do with that. And Jim DeBetta has helped inventors get their products in stores. He's helped them get them on retail sales. And also, Jim has worked with the experts on the Shark Tank, which is a popular reality television show where venture capitalists make decisions on which inventions they should fund. So Jim has seen it all. He's worked one-on-one with these venture capitalists. He knows what they're looking for. He can take a look at a product in a hot second and assess its possibilities for success. So I encourage you to join us tomorrow. I know Christine had a little bit of coughing there. Hopefully I've been able to give you the tips that I know. Follow Christine, and she'll follow up with you and share even more to help you be successful. I'm excited that you joined us today, and thanks, Ricky, of course, for your question as well. I will see you next week right here on the Indie Business Podcast. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.